or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Crest in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta, thanking you for joining me, and let me also give thanks and congratulate two more of our radio family members that are celebrating anniversaries this week. We've got St. Therese Radio in Abilene, Kansas, 7 years with EWTN, and Archangel Radio in Mobile, Alabama, celebrating 12 years. Congratulations. I know it's a lot of work, but it's great service for all of our listeners. And I keep stressing, for those of us who produce programming, we can't do anything without our local Catholic stations being there day in and day out, making our programming available. So thank you so much, and congratulations. Let me tell you what's coming up on this hour of Crest in the Afternoon. We're going to be talking about the new film of Mother Teresa, No Greater Love. She's St. Teresa of Calcutta. Of course, we still call her Mother Teresa. But we've got two nights, October 3rd and October 4th, where this film is going to be available. It was produced by the Knights of Columbus. It shows the impact of her, well, her life, but also of the order that was born out of her life, the Missionaries of Charity. So director Dave Nalliera is going to be joining me to talk about the new film. Also coming up, we're going to raise questions about this new prime minister of Italy, Giorgia Meloni. The recent election there has made global headlines, and she is been on a platform that supports traditional families, national identity, friendly to the faith, opposition to same-sex weddings. What do we know about her? Kishore Jayabalan will be joining me to talk about this. We'll also find out more of what's happening with his Kateri Institute. That's coming up. And then I have a few words to share regarding the upcoming proposal here in the state of Michigan and why it is vitally important for us to continue our prayer. Many of us are engaged in a 54-day rosary novena. So I, again, want to just keep before all of us, even if you're not from the state of Michigan, we are asking for national support since this is such a toe-to-toe fight with pro-abortion forces. Right now, though, let's get to today's headlines.
Thanks, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, September 29th. It's the Feast of the Archangels. Today's news brought to you by Charity Mobile, supporting pro-life and Catholic causes at CharityMobile.com. Over 1 million customers are without power across Florida after Hurricane Ian swept through. Florida Power and Light CEO Eric Silagy says restoration is in progress.
In areas that did not suffer catastrophic damage, we will be stringing line, we will be restoring power very quickly. But in other places where parts of the grid have been completely destroyed, poles uprooted, we may have to rebuild parts of the grid, and that could take many days, if not longer.
In the hardest hit areas in the southwestern part of the state, some counties are reporting nearly a 100% power outage. One of those counties in southwest Florida, Lee County, is given a grim assessment of some of the barrier islands ravaged by Ian. Lee is the home to cities including Fort Myers. County Manager Roger DeJarlais says the bridges to Pine Island have failed and five sections of the Sanibel Causeway have fallen into the water. Meanwhile, Cape Coral Police Chief Anthony Sizemore is recommending those that evacuated the city to wait to return.
It's not a very comfortable place to be right now. We have infrastructure damage. We have power loss. We have water interruption right now. And if you are able to remain where you are safely evacuated, I recommend that you do so.
The early price tag is in for how much damage Hurricane Ian did to Naples. It's $20 million for the city facilities. That doesn't even include private property. Bishop Carlos Bilo of East Timor has been accused of sexually abusing several teenage boys. Bilo, now age 74, came to international attention in the 1990s for his outspoken role in protesting the Indonesian occupation of his country. He was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1996 for his efforts. From the Ave Maria Radio.net news desk, I'm C. Clark.
I'm Al Cresta. A film presenting the life and impact of St. Teresa of Calcutta, we call her, of course, Mother Teresa, is going to be premiering in theaters on October 3rd and 4th. It's Mother Teresa, No Greater Love, produced by the Knights of Columbus. And again, we'll show the remarkable life of this woman. You know, there are some people, you look at them and you say to yourself, you know, God really got his money's worth out of this one. With St. Teresa of Calcutta, I think that's the common opinion. With me right now to talk about the film is David Nalieri. He is, in fact, the director and producer of Mother Teresa, No Greater Love. And again, I want to say October 3rd, October 4th, keep that in mind. We'll have showtimes where you can get information on showtimes and more information at motherteresamovie.com. David, good to have you here. Thanks.
Thanks so much for having me on to speak about this great saint, and it's great to be with you.
Nobody would deny that a film about Mother Teresa is warranted. The question would be, why now, and what was the overall objective?
Yeah, so Mother Teresa, we just celebrated, or commemorated, I should say, rather, the 25th anniversary of her death. She passed away in 1997, and in the years after her death, the Missionaries of Charity, the order she founded, they looked into different options for films. They spoke to some Hollywood directors and got as far as having some scripts, I think, and they wanted to have a film that could tell the story of their foundress, Mother Teresa, for a new generation. But they could never really find a film, a director, an actress to play Mother Teresa they felt comfortable with. And I've been producing a lot of Catholic documentaries. I work for the Knights of Columbus. They've liked some of the films we made, in particular documentary Liberating a Continent, John Paul II,
yeah,
Call of Communism. And so they turned to us a year ago and said, would you tell the story of Mother Teresa for a new generation to coincide with the 25th anniversary? Very grateful that Supreme Knight Patrick Kelly said yes, and we spent the past year filming on five continents and telling this, you know, incredible story.
Hard to turn down a project like that, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's a tremendous honor. It is a little daunting, but we were encouraged by Mother Teresa's words to do something beautiful for God.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And we really committed ourselves to telling this story in the most authentic way we could.
Yeah, the phrase, do something beautiful for God, or something beautiful for God, goes back to Malcolm Muggeridge's film way back. Was she reluctant from the very start to have publicity?
Yeah, she was. And it's funny you bring that up, because to me that was one of the interesting things I learned from the film. I didn't know so much about her background with Muggeridge and the negotiations. But Malcolm Muggeridge, of course, famous BBC journalist, he was fascinated by her, tried multiple times in the 60s to get her to do an interview. She always declined. She was not a publicity seeker. She had no desire to be famous. And ultimately, and we trace it in the film, Muggeridge goes to a cardinal archbishop in England, asks him to intercede. The archbishop goes to the Vatican, and ultimately the Vatican was the one that turned to Mother Teresa and said, please, you know, grant Malcolm Muggeridge an interview, share with the world the great work you're doing. And it was only then that Mother Teresa agreed to the interview with Malcolm Muggeridge. And of course, the book and the film, Something Beautiful for God, helped launch her into international fame. But this turn, the sisters never sought fame. And even when we traveled the world, we did more than 150 interviews for this film, many of them Missionaries of Charity. And they all would tell me, this is the greatest suffering for me, to have to sit and do an interview. So they're not publicity seekers. And that's what makes this film, I think, extraordinary.
Yeah.
You probably will never see a film like this again, because the access we got to all their apostolates, to the work they do, is really, really very unusual, and got some incredible footage of the great work they do.
How much of the film is devoted to the work that they're presently doing? How much of it is biographical of Mother Teresa?
Yeah, I would say more than half of it is the work they're doing currently. What we wanted the film to do, there's no narrator. We didn't want to do a chronological biography where a narrator tells you she's born to this day and this is the day she went to India. We canvassed archives all around the world, and we got a lot, found a lot of incredible archival footage of Mother Teresa, her travels, her work, a lot of extraordinary interview snippets that she would give when she would travel to these countries. So you hear directly from her about her life, about her witness, about her experiences. We have dramatizations to tell a little bit about her life and some of the formative events that happened. But I think the framework of the film, and I think what makes it really flow and work, is that we travel to these various apostolates all over the world where you see the living witness of Mother Teresa today and the extraordinary work of the Missionaries of Charity. And so we were in Tijuana, Mexico. We were in the Amazon region of Brazil where they traveled by boat to reach indigenous tribes. We were in Nairobi, Kenya with their work in the ghettos and slums with poor and disabled children. And all of these images really give testimony to the incredible work and of the Missionaries of Charity and their care for the poorest of the poor.
Did you spend any time in the film dealing with this really remarkable fact that she seemed to have a long time in which God was absent, not literally absent, but at a subjective level, where she seemed to be in desolation? And do you spend any time dealing with that? I know I spoke years ago to Father Brian Kuladichuk, who helped me put that in perspective. I'm wondering if you deal with that at all.
We do. We do explore that in the film. I think it's important. When I started delving into the film and talked to friends and people who knew a little bit about her life, I think there's a lot of misinformation that came out. Of course, everything that you're talking about was revealed after she died, when we started investigating and preparing the cause for canonization. And this is unknown, and it shocked many of her closest friends because she always exuded this joy. But she went through 50 years of a dark night of the soul. And so there's some perspective that came out that she had a crisis of faith, that she perhaps didn't believe in God for a period of time. And that is really misinformation and misunderstanding. Ultimately, this was a cross that was given to her to go through this period of not feeling that love of God. But she trusted in that love, and she continued to serve the poorest of the poor, and continued to always have a very rich and deep faith, and continued to always show that joy to others. But yeah, she did go through what many saints throughout history have gone through, this dark night of the soul. Now, what made her story extraordinary is that it lasted for 50 years. But ultimately, she came to discover that this is something God gave to her, and something she could offer up in redemptive suffering, and ultimately something that helps her bond in an even deeper way, a more intimate way, with the suffering in the world. And I think it helped her connect to the poor, connect with the suffering in a way that transformed so many lives.
That's what I was wondering, if that connection was made, because that was the way I, when I heard about it, I was surprised, like a lot of people, when I heard about it. And I, as time went on, though, I said, well, here's a woman who's going to the poorest of the poor. She's going to those who appear to have no hope in the world. Her own sense of desolation, in a sense, puts her where they are, without hope. It makes sense to me, although I think to endure that for 50 years is itself extraordinary. How she made, I mean, she only by grace could she have kept moving, I think.
That's right. And it's funny, we interviewed one of her closest companions who traveled out with her and said she would just run on grace. When you travel with her, she'd be up at 5 in the morning or 4:30 in the morning, go to late at night. She was blessed with incredible energy, incredible stamina, and just a very strong woman, you know, and a woman who made a tremendous impact on so many levels. But a fierce woman, a woman of great courage. And I think any viewer can take away so much from this film because she was this very extraordinary character.
I think this is fantastic. I'll tell you, we need a film like this. I think it'll be a breath of fresh air for people. A lot of people are feeling distressed over many problems nationally and ecclesiastically. And, you know, when we started doing our radio work here, St. John Paul II and St. Teresa of Calcutta were the two public faces of the Catholic Church. And we don't have figures as well recognized or as well as universally respected today, unfortunately. And so this comes at a great time, I think, for all of us.
I think this film could have a tremendous impact. Depending, it can meet you where you're at. So if you have a friend who is fallen away Catholic or very jaded or very cynical about the church, I think this film is for them.
Yeah.
Because
good.
There's such an authenticity to witnessing the work of the missionaries of charity.
Yep.
And if you're a committed Catholic who needs to kind of to reboot your faith, there's so many different aspects to be drawn to. One thing that is very striking that comes across the film, we explore her Eucharistic devotion. Mother Teresa had a strong belief Christ's presence in the Eucharist, and for her it was very real. The same Christ hidden in the Eucharist is the Christ hidden in the poor.
Yeah.
And it was very much interconnected. So the missionaries of charity spend an hour in adoration every day, and that very much is tied to their charitable work. And so as even we work through the Eucharistic revival here of the Church of the United States, that Mother Teresa is a great witness of our Eucharistic faith. And so, you know, it works. I think the film and the life of Mother Teresa works on many different levels, and she's a great model for us as we face the different challenges that you allude to.
Do you reenact scenes? Did you need to get somebody to play Mother Teresa?
Yes, so there's no dialogue. The film is a documentary, so we tell the life of Mother Teresa and her childhood growing up in present-day North Macedonia, the city of Skopje,
mm-hmm.
and then she leaves at age 18, spends a little time in Ireland, then on to India. We do that all through dramatic reenactments. We did cast a young actress to play Mother Teresa, and then an adult actress to play her as an adult, who goes on to become Loretto Sister First, then a missionary of charity. So we do have dramatic reenactors work very close with missionaries of charity to have everything accurate in terms of the costuming and the different props that were used. We filmed in Slovenia with a wonderful Catholic film production company called Cipash that does very high-end work. And we're really pleased with the results.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to it. And how do people get tickets? We want to turn out as many people as we can. So how do people get a hold of tickets?
Yeah, so our film's website is MotherTeresaMovie.com. That's MotherTeresaMovie.com. There's no H in Teresa. If you go to the website, you can look at the trailer, read more about the film. You can also click on a button for tickets. There you can punch in your zip code, and you'll find a theater near you. We're playing in more than 1,000 theaters, October 3rd and 4th. Good chance of a theater near you, but I would encourage your listeners to check it out soon because we are selling out across the country, and ticket sales are going very well. And this is a film you want to see on the big screen.
Yeah, very good. David, thanks so much for your work. Looking forward to seeing the film, and hope we can talk again in the future.
Thank you, sir. God bless.
David Nalieri, again, MotherTeresaMovie.com.
Looking for an evening out? The O'Kelly and All Saints Knights of Columbus Councils invite you to a spaghetti fundraiser for the Anna Memorial School, a nonprofit school in India with a terrific Catholic focus. The dinner, including entertainment, is Saturday, October 8th at All Saints and Taylor. Doors open at 5:30. Tickets are $15 for adults with reduced pricing for kids. Tickets must be purchased via Eventbrite.com. At the site, search Anna Memorial School or call 734-231-3040. Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
Hi, ladies. It's Teresa Tomeo from Catholic Connection on Ave Maria Radio, and I'm really looking forward to speaking at the second annual Michigan Catholic Women's Conference in the Diocese of Lansing Saturday, October 15th, and the registration is now open. The theme is For Such a Time as This, that theme, of course, taken from the Old Testament book of Esther. Esther entrusted her life to God entirely, utterly, totally, and as a result, God was able to use her unique qualities and gifts to save his people, the Israelites, from sure destruction. destruction. In the same way, the Michigan Catholic Women's Conference is seeking to encourage all women, you and me, to embrace our true identity as daughters of the Most High King. And in doing so, we too can begin to save ourselves, our marriages, our children, and indeed our country and culture from a similar threat of destruction. Last year, over 1,000 women gathered together for this event. So for information and to register, visit MichiganCWC.org. That's MichiganCWC.org.
Food for the Journey, Sister Ann Shield.
Brothers and sisters, I pray to God that those who need to hear this message would really hear it. God waits for you. He waits to save you. What we need to do is accept Him, receive Him into our hearts, receive Him into our lives. He waits to set us free for eternal life. Oh, brothers and sisters, I want you to know Jesus is waiting to meet you and me. God will embrace us, draw us even deeper into Himself forever, not just for a moment, but forever. If you've turned away, please turn back. If you've grown lax, if you don't attend Mass very often, make a decision, brothers and sisters. Please, because He waits for you with arms outstretched, unless you or I turn away from Him. Let us not, brothers and sisters, and know that I pray for you every day that your faith may grow stronger.
Sister Ann Shields gives you food for the journey, weekday mornings at 6:45 and again at 11:30 on 990 Ave Maria Radio. Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization, Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 75% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
And good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Let's face it, many of us know nothing about Italian politics. And so when we see a story pop onto the front page, or we see a YouTube clip of a candidate, and we see that this candidate says things that we resonate with, well, we might get excited about it. So we had recently, there's been actually an old statement from the woman who's recently been elected, I think, president or prime minister, and we'll actually sort that out in just a moment, Giorgia Meloni. And she made this statement. Why is the family an enemy? Why is the family so frightening? There is a single answer to all these questions. Because the family defines us. It's our identity. Because everything that defines us is now an enemy for those who would like us to no longer have an identity and to simply become perfect consumer slaves. And so they attack national identity. They attack religious identity. They attack gender identity. They attack family identity. I can't define myself as an Italian, a Christian, a woman, a mother. No. I must be Citizen K, or Gender K, or Parent 1, or Parent 2. I must be a number. Because when I'm only a number, when I no longer have an identity or roots, then I will be the perfect slave at the mercy of financial speculators. Well, that clip was sent around recently, and it's the words of Giorgia Meloni, who's with the Brothers of Italy party. And to find out more of what she has achieved and what her party, you know, represents there, rest assured, she's being accused of being a fascist and being a lover of Mussolini and we'll sort all that out. But with me right now to do it is Kishore Jayabalan, chairman of the Commission on Catholic Social Teaching for the Diocese of Lansing. From 2005 to 2019, he directed the Rome office of the Acton Institute. Before that, he served as staff member of the Vatican's Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace, diplomatic attaché for the permanent observer mission of the Holy See to the United Nations in New York. And, well, it's good to have you with me again, Kishore. Thanks.
Thanks, Al. It's great to be with you.
Let's start. Who is this woman, Georgia Maloney?
Yes. So Georgia Maloney, and really quite remarkably for a country like Italy, is the first female. I noticed you said prime minister. It's actually the president of the Council of Ministers in Italy, but colloquially we can say prime minister. Really the head of the coalition government that just came into power. And she had served as a youth minister, head of the Ministry for Youth under a previous Berlusconi government. But as a leader of a coalition in Italy, she's really come to the forefront. And all the media reaction to her, rather than really celebrating what should be a historic first, the first woman, but because she's not of the left, she's getting criticized.
Yeah,
and
so
her party, the Brothers of Italy, is, of course, the main target because it has some derivation from the Italian Social Movement Party, which has some relationship with the past fascist party in Mussolini. So, of course, that's getting everybody's attention. But it's also meant, let nobody be deceived, it's also meant to discredit her social conservatism and her pride in being an Italian and being a Catholic and standing up to the kind of progressive agenda.
Yeah. So girl power is only to be celebrated when it's girls of the left.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, we saw that, of course, with Margaret Thatcher.
Yep.
Right? I mean, you're not considered a true woman or a minority unless you're on the left. So, this is old hat, really, in Western politics. And it's really unfortunate. And I think it actually adds to people getting disgusted with the left and voting for people like Giorgia Meloni.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
You know, people say, like, you're so obviously biased and prejudiced against anybody who doesn't give you power, right, to the left. And, you know, what's remarkable now is that, you know, she's being looked at as a closet authoritarian, even though she's pro-Ukraine and pro-European Union. She's being looked at as a threat to democracy just because she's not of the left. And the irony is, of course, she replaced a technocratic government, which took power away from a democratically elected right-wing government just 4 years ago. So the charge of being undemocratic is really rich and not at all, you know, in keeping in line with the truth of the way things actually are.
Yeah, they throw the word fascist at her, and of course, I'm not sure anybody even knows what that means any longer. I mean, even in 1944, Orwell said the word had little meaning, and that was just what, a year or two after Mussolini was deposed. So it's a pejorative term. What they want to point to, though, is they say, well, look, her political party has this tricolor flame as its emblem, and that goes back to Mussolini's day. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, I mentioned that there was a party, the Italian Social Movement Party, which was the predecessor to the Brothers of Italy, did have some of the kind of fascist members of Italy were part of that. Now, I mean, nobody's talking about bringing back fascism in Italy. This is all about what's happening now, right?
Right.
This is about the that she's pro-life, right? She's against the LGBT agenda. She's against unrestricted illegal immigration, right? And these are the big issues. And of course, she was against the COVID lockdowns. Now, her party was not part of the most recent technocratic government, so she was in a position of being able to criticize without being part of the government before. And those COVID lockdowns in Italy were very, very severe.
Yes, I remember.
You couldn't leave your house without a permit.
Yep, I remember that.
In the country, right?
Yep.
And I think people are rebelling against this kind of, I mean, again, it's funny because the real authoritarians are on the left. She was rebelling, leading a movement against the technocratic government, which wasn't elected, which is driving the economy into the ground, which is really diluting Italian identity with unmitigated immigration, right?
And they've got bad unemployment, right?
Unemployment's high.
Yeah.
Economic growth is slow, but that's been the case in Italy for a while. The immigration issue remains a very important one in Italy, and I say this as a dark-skinned immigrant who lived in Italy for 20 years, Italians are very welcoming as a nation. But at the same time, since 2015, when Angela Merkel decided to open the floodgates, not just to Germany, but to all of Europe, and Italy being on the southernmost part of Europe in the Mediterranean is much more prone than any other country in Europe to immigration. Especially through Libya, you're getting a lot of African and Muslim immigrants, and that is bound to change the character of the nation.
Right.
And I think a lot of people in Italy are saying, look, we want to be welcoming, we want to welcome the stranger, and we're open to helping certainly refugees and asylum seekers. But mass immigration, and this is happening all over the West, mass immigration does change the character of a country. I remember when I first moved to Italy, there was an outspoken conservative Catholic Archbishop in Bologna, Cardinal Beefy, who said that he's all for bringing in more Filipinos and Nigerians because they tend to be Catholics, right? as immigrants, and we get better cultural fit into the country. And of course, he's attacked for that, but he purposely chose non-white Filipinos and Nigerians to say this is not about race, right? This is about beliefs and
culture.
We, as a Catholic country, should be able to choose who enters our country. And,
sure.
and that kind of thing really rankles the left, the multiculturalist left, which doesn't want, it's almost ashamed of its Christianity when it comes to protecting the core tenets of the faith. It wants Christianity when it agrees with a progressive left-wing agenda. So on the environment, on peace matters, on immigration, but on anything to do with right-wing matters, it's a different story.
Yeah. She's been opposed to LGBTQ policies. She has been an opponent of unrestricted immigration. She's good on the life issues, I suppose.
Yes. I mean, you know, I think she's in Italy. You know, of course, the politics of something like abortion are quite different than here. Their abortion laws were not as unrestricted as they were under Roe v. Wade here, and as they, again, could be. Like, we're talking in the state of Michigan now.
Right.
Like, we could have something even worse than Roe v. Wade in a few weeks. But at the same time, I think she's making a cultural stand. I mean, I'm not sure how much of the pro-life movement is trying to change the laws on abortion in a place like Italy. But, you know, she is taking a cultural stand in favor of life, and that by itself is remarkable. To say that she's a single mother, to say that I stand with other single mothers, to be able to say that life is a better choice than abortion is of great cultural importance in Italy.
Yeah. Has Pope Francis said anything, or has the Vatican officials had anything to say about her?
So the Vatican typically tries to stay out of Italian politics directly. They'll leave that to the Italian Bishops' Conference. And the Italian Bishops' Conference offered a very vaguely worded, generic type of statement, raising the immigration issue, I would say, above all. But, again, careful not to criticize too much the incoming government. So I think they're very wary that the people are with the government on this, that you can't, you don't want to, alienate the rank and file people. And so, again, it was a very vaguely worded statement. And of course, everyone knows where Pope Francis stands on, making a priority out of these more left-wing issues.
Yeah.
I think it's been a very tepid response so far. I think another problem in Italy, of course, is that governments come and go, right?
Right.
So even though she won now, she's in a coalition, and all it takes, is for one of her coalition partners to say, we want out of the coalition, and the government could collapse. So most of my Italian friends, while they're happy with the results of the election, are not sure how long this Meloni government can last.
Yeah. Let me go back to a technicality that I'd like to have clarified, and that is, what is the relationship between president and prime minister? Are they two separate offices? I know the you've got, I think the president selects the prime minister, but what is the exact relationship here? Because I can't tell from the just the way it's being reported.
Right. So the president of the republic is the kind of figurehead, head of state, formally, of the government.
Okay.
And so they don't call the, like what I initially called the president of the council of ministers, what we would call the prime minister, they often refer to as premier. So it's better, instead of saying two presidents, it's better to say president of the republic, which is the kind of honorary overseer of the government, of the state of Italy.
Kishore, hold it there. We'll come back on the other side of the break and continue.
At Glass Doctor, our trained specialists are experts at fixing foggy and cracked glass, leaving any residential window looking like new without replacing the entire window. Bring back the view of any window with Glass Doctor. Visit glassdoctor.com to request a free estimate on repairing your foggy or cracked windows. Let Glass Doctor bring back your view.
Call the Glass Doctor, we'll fix your paint. Oh yeah!
If you only see the difficulty in parenting, you will never see the treasure. Catholic Charities of Southeast Michigan are devoted to helping moms see the treasure at every stage of life. Project Hope provides material assistance and guidance. Adoption, foster care, and counseling services are also joyfully offered. Our Walking with Moms in Need initiative provides help and hope at every turn. To get involved or make a financial contribution, visit ccsem.org/mom. That's ccsem.org/mom.
Looking for peace? Longing for joy? God is calling you to know and love Jesus Christ like never before and help others do the same. God is calling you to bring Ignatian prayer into the suffering world, to work for the new evangelization. Here's your opportunity. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com. Order the free digital training and facilitator manual, LordTeachMeToPray.com. Click on the red button now. God is calling you. Underwritten by Lord Teach Me to Pray.
I'm angry, frustrated. Sound like you? Someone you know? Well, it could be any of us from time to time. But there's different types of anger. It's not so cut and dry. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. One thing is for sure, you don't need to suffer with anger frustration. In my book, Living Calm, Mastering Anger and Frustration, you'll learn whether your anger is a product of your nature or your nurture, and how to regulate those emotions and those thoughts. You can get Living Calm and all my other books at AveMariaRadio.net.
When a kid loses a tooth, it's exciting. But an adult has some serious decisions that needs a caring, faithful, and family-oriented dentist like Dr. Maddie with Advanced Dentistry Center. Here's what Dr. Maddie says to those that are deciding between bridges and implants.
While bridges only last 8 to 10 years and damage adjacent teeth, implants last up to 30 years and help prevent bone loss. Plus, they look more natural.
Extremely natural, with Dr. Maddie, who practices the art of dentistry at Advanced Dentistry Center. Conveniently located at 13 Mile and Telegraph, make the decision to call 248-594-9592 or click AdvancedDentistryCenter.com. Mention Ave Maria and receive 10% off dental implants. Be comfortable knowing that Advanced Dentistry Center's goal is to provide you with the most up-to-date treatments to help you look and feel your best. That's 248-594-9592.
Configuring the Bluetooth. Deciding who controls the music. Remembering where you parked. Why are simple things sometimes so complicated? Thankfully, with an auto owner's insurance independent agent, getting the right coverage for your vehicle doesn't have to be one of them. So you can get back to more important things. Like remembering if you're on the third or fourth level of the parking garage. That's simple human sense.
For your no-obligation quote, please call Choice Insurance at 734-641-4200.
This program is underwritten in part by the following.
This October 3rd and 4th.
Hunger is not only for a piece of bread. Hunger is for love. That man lying in the street, eaten up by worms, it feeds the child of God.
Mother Teresa, No Greater Love, exclusively in theaters October 3rd and 4th. More information at MotherTeresaMovie.com. That's MotherTeresaMovie.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, continuing conversation with Kishore Jayabalan about the Italian elections and the rise of Giorgia Meloni, who's a quote from a few years ago from a speech she gave at the World Meeting of Families has been circulating, getting people's attention. Also, I should mention, too, YouTube actually took down that quote, at least at one site where it appeared, claiming that it violated their community standards. Thankfully, people over at Reason Magazine challenged YouTube on it, and now YouTube said they erred in removing that statement of hers. I should also say that it wasn't universally removed from all websites, but it was removed from the one particular one at least. Before the break, we were talking about Italy and just trying to clarify the president, prime minister. Let me ask, in the pecking order of a hierarchy, where is she? She's not number one, so is she number two or three or four?
She's number one in the sense that she's the head of the government, right?
Okay.
The difference between the head of state and the head of government. In the United States, we don't have this distinction,
yes,
but in many other countries, they do.
Well, in England, so, the Queen was head of state, and right? The Prime Minister was head of the government.
Yes, and the Prime Minister, in a parliamentary system, the Prime Minister, right, is the Council of Ministers, and the Prime Minister is the first among those.
Right.
So Meloni, in American English, we would definitely say Prime Minister, but in Italian, the title is the President of the Council of Ministers.
Gotcha.
Italians don't want to keep things simple, so they have two presidents. if you want to call it that. But in English, we say Prime Minister for what Meloni is doing.
Yeah.
And so she is the putative head of the Italian government, no question. Now, the President of the Republic does have an important function in confirming who the Prime Minister is.
Gotcha.
Now, typically, the President of the Republic is a very old, elderly statesman, stays above the fray, doesn't involve himself in the actual politics of the government. But if you and your listeners might remember, in 2018, when Matteo Salvini, another right-wing politician, was about to become Prime Minister, there was all kinds of interventions done to make sure that the coalition didn't put him at the front of the government and made him an interior minister, along with the Five Star Movement, which was kind of more of a left-wing populist movement. So they have ways of throwing a monkey wrench into the gears if they don't like who's elected. And so that could always happen, but I don't think so it will happen with Meloni. I haven't heard that from any of my Italian friends, and I haven't seen that in the Italian press.
Yeah.
But as I said before the break, with these coalition governments in Italy, all it takes is some internal strife among the parties and the government can collapse. So it's never quite clear how long this government will last. They don't have a fixed term, say like 4 or 5 years, through which they can just simply govern.
And why do you think she is as popular as she is in Italy right now?
Well, I would say the main reason is that she wasn't part of the technocratic government that had been in power, right, the last few years.
So she's different.
Avoiding being in power is often the best way to be popular, right, because you're not making the hard decisions.
Right, exactly.
You can't take any flack for things that have been proposed and put into place. And as I mentioned also, the COVID restrictions in Italy were very unpopular and very restrictive. People might remember at the beginning of 2020 when there were vaccine passports being issued in Italy. There were protests against the passports, and people were burning their vaccine passports. And it was very interesting, not because of they weren't doing this in the name of individual personal liberties to not be vaccinated. They were doing it because other people might not have those passports. So they were doing it almost in solidarity. They were burning their passports in solidarity with those who didn't have the vaccinations done. It was a very interesting dynamic, and that kind of sense of solidarity that exists still among the Italian people that didn't want to see people discriminated against for not being vaccinated.
Interesting. Yeah. So what role does the Catholic faith play among Italian politicians? How significant is it? Is it pretty much separated out from public life? Is Italy as secular a state as, say, the United States?
Italy is secularizing like every other Western state, but it hasn't gone as far down the road.
Okay. Now,
rather than framing it in terms of the Catholic faith, I would say Catholic culture has become increasingly important as a political factor. So post-World War Italy with the Christian Democratic parties, you had Christian Democrats of the right and Christian Democrats of the left.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of held the center together and kept the communists out of power.
Yep.
Post-Cold War, the Christian Democratic parties had kind of splintered and fallen away. And it looked like, you know, that was kind of the end of political Catholicism as a political force.
Mm-hmm.
But with the rise of Silvio Berlusconi as kind of a rich populist politician, like with Donald Trump, he was kind of the proto-Trump, I would say.
Okay.
That kind of changed the dynamics of things, because then it became much more about insider-outsider politics, similar to what we saw in the UK and what we see here. And the immigration issue became a lightning rod. And the immigration issue, because the church had been kind of on the fence with the immigration issue, didn't want to be seen as excluding non-Christians from coming into the country,
right,
with the exception of Cardinal Beefy, as I mentioned in the last segment. You know, it left a vacuum, a political vacuum, for somebody like a Matteo Salvini or a Giorgia Meloni to come in and say, I'm defending Italy. I'm defending Catholic Italy. I'm defending Catholic civilization.
Yes, yes.
In the name of restricting immigration. And that's, I think a big part of that is because the bishops have been reluctant to be critical of unrestricted mass illegal immigration, which, by the way, is also very dangerous for the immigrants, right? Coming over on rafts from Africa and things like that.
Yeah.
So they could have made a humanitarian argument against illegal immigration,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't do that because I think they didn't want to be seen as xenophobic or chauvinistic or anti-Muslim or
right.
whatever it may be.
Why can't, I mean, this puzzles me. Why can't the culture issue be raised? We do know that, you know, there's a, immigrants bring with them a culture, oftentimes a language, and that's something to be concerned about, one way or the other. You take a look at nations and what is the glue that holds them together. You mentioned after World War II, you had Catholic Democrat politicians, well, some of the right, some of the left. But what held it together was this idea of a Catholic culture. So within the Catholic culture, you could be to the right or to the left. This question of culture seems to be ignored by most modern politicians. It's as though it makes no difference that somebody coming from another culture enters this culture, and they, you know, they have no effect whatsoever. I don't understand the refusal to weigh the cultural component of this immigration argument.
Well, I mentioned the term multiculturalism before, right? And I think that multiculturalism is kind of the broad reason why any single culture is not considered to be worth defending. So as we've gone to a more globalized world with more open borders and easier travel and these kinds of things, the idea of standing up for one's culture has come to be seen as déclassé, as being kind of prejudicial, if not even bigoted.
Yeah.
So as a result of that, especially in big cities, right, where cosmopolitan
oh, sure.
tend to live,
right.
you have to be more open to people from all races
yes.
and ethnicities and religions and those kinds of things. That makes it much harder to defend your culture as being somehow superior to others and something to which people, immigrants, ought to be assimilated into, right? So
yeah.
this was, I think that's part of the explanation for it.
But the irony is that in claiming by favoring, quote, multiculturalism, it ends up leaving a vacuum. No culture then is actually favored. You have this abstraction called multiculturalism. And
that's right. It waters down all cultures and religions.
Yeah.
Right? Now, of course, when immigrants come, they don't know this. So when Muslim immigrants come to Italy, right, they're still practicing Islam as
yes,
they wish.
Of course.
And there's a clash, right? There's a little bit of a tension. And of course, over generations, the children tend to assimilate more than the immigrants. So
right.
When I first moved to Rome 20 years ago, there were hardly any immigrants in my neighborhood. But by the time I left 20 years later, there were many Filipino, for example, mm-hmm. children that mm-hmm. spoke perfect Italian with a Roman accent, right? Because they became Romans. They were born and raised in Italy and they assimilated those customs. But again, it depends what you're teaching them, right? If you're teaching them, they all follow Italian soccer, right? That's a big cultural marker
mm-hmm.
of being an Italian.
Yeah.
It used to be that also practicing the Catholic faith. Now, as I mentioned, Italy is secularizing not as rapidly as some other Western European countries, but it is secularizing. So there is room for the church, and if the bishops won't do it, politicians will take advantage of this and say there's room for defending who we are, right, as a civilization, as a culture. And, of course, Italy being an ancient civilization, these things don't go away very easily.
Right.
And if people perceive that you're ashamed or embarrassed to be what we once were, people will pick up on them. They'll sense there's something wrong, right? That you're not being proud of who you are
right.
in the country. And that really does turn people off. People don't like to see their homes and their countries denigrated especially by their own politicians, right?
Yeah.
So you would think this is a no-brainer, but it's a big blind spot for that kind of cosmopolitan elitist left to not recognize that people are proud of their homes and want to defend it. They don't want to kick out immigrants.
No.
They want people to come to a place and respect where they're coming.
Yeah, exactly. Let me switch gears a little bit because these kind of questions about Christ, about culture, about church and world, about creative scholarship and active faith. These kind of questions are going to be taken up in this Kateri Institute for Catholic Studies that you've been developing. Tell us what it is and where you are in the process.
Yes, so the Kateri Institute is the
Kateri.
Pronunciation.
Okay.
Yeah, we need to put a pronunciation guide on the website.
I will do that.
named after Saint Kateri Tekakwitha. So speaking of multiculturalism, I'm sure everybody knows who Saint Kateri is, but she was known as the Lily of the Mohawks, right? The first Native American saint. Who lived in the 7th century in kind of what is now upstate New York and lower Quebec, a convert to the Catholic faith, who really stood up for her faith in very difficult circumstances among the Iroquois people. And it's a neat kind of patron saint for what we're trying to do with the Catholic Studies Institute at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. U of M, of course, is a very multicultural place that doesn't, want to hear necessarily about Catholic identity. So we thought this is the best name to use to promote Catholic studies at a big secular research university.
And people can learn more about it at kateri.org, kateri.org. Is that right?
No, Kateri Institute.
Kateri Institute.org. Very good.
Yes.
Thanks, Kishore.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
And now, a Meditation Minute from Father Gabriel Richard High School.
I'm Brendan, a senior, with a meditation on Matthew 23, verses 13 through 22. In this passage, Jesus issues a warning to the Pharisees. He shows them how they have become blind fools or blind guides. He is speaking about spiritual blindness, about the dangers one faces when one loses perspective. He reminds us that God makes our gifts valuable, that we as fallen people have no merit apart from our Lord. It is easy to get wrapped up in your own life and to start to believe that you can accomplish things, that you can be someone, by your own power. But as Jesus reminds us in the Gospel, the gifts are made sacred by the altar. If we want to grow in love and holiness, it must always be on our minds that God turns our efforts into something fruitful, not us.
This Meditation Minute is brought to you by the students, faculty, and staff of Father Gabriel Richard High School. Visit fgrhs.org. That's fgrhs.org.
Abortion.
Pornography.
Embryonic stem cell research.
Corporate contributions to Planned Parenthood. Do you invest in companies that are engaged in these practices? The Ave Maria Mutual Funds do not, and their investment portfolios reflect that. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Thank you for joining me today. We can follow up on all the conversations we had today, and we'll have those available for you at AveMariaRadio.net. Go to the Cresta Guest Archives there. Books that are mentioned on this program are available in the online bookstore. And let me say, as I make room now for Catholic Answers Live to grab your attention, let me say thank you and congratulations to Archangel Radio in Mobile, Alabama. For 12 years, they've been serving the gospel and on the air there. And also for 7 years, let me congratulate St. Therese Radio in Abilene, Kansas. Again, two more of our radio family members that have been working hard and now this week celebrating anniversaries show the support that they need to continue to do the work of the new evangelization. Once again, thanks for being with me today. I'm Al Cresta. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of this thing, and we'll see what we can do to think more clearly about life through the teaching of the Catholic Church.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.